Well, I think the stereotypical image of a carer is of a middle-aged woman looking after an elderly mother.
I find the term carer now acceptable, but initially I didn't.
Well, carers are all different, aren't they? Because they're all caring for different, some's sort of physical disabilities and some's mental disabilities.
People perceive carers as just somebody being at home and looking after the person that they care for. They don't actually recognise that they have other roles in their life.
Many people providing support for relatives, neighbours or friends do not recognise themselves as carers. Jonathan Smith runs a mobile information project in West Sussex. He raises awareness of carers' rights and services by taking a specially adapted minibus out to local communities.
OK, right, well, we're off to Lancing today and we'll be parking outside the co-op. We see up to about 30 people there, but we'll see how it goes. We've got a set of stands for outside the bus, which have eight faces of young, old people, male, female, and the caption is, "Which one is the carer?" Which is supposed to be a challenge to people who are walking past to ask themselves, "Am I a carer?" And it can be anyone, from a young carer to an elderly carer, men, women, black, white, you know, the whole spectrum. Now, these stands go out just to let people know that we're here. A list of the sort of information that we can provide people. Hello, can we help at all?
I just saw the sign saying carers and I wondered whether it applied to me at all. I mean, I don't live with my father. He's much older than I am and he's almost completely blind now and I have to keep popping in to see him.
Do you want to step on the bus for a minute? We'll have a chat.
Well, that would be nice,
yeah?
Thank you.
Okie doke. A lot of people don't like walking into social services offices or making a fuss at GP surgeries about the fact that they're a carer. A lot of people are very shy of statutory services and we're very informal. We park in town high streets and we're just there and we're a couple of perfectly ordinary people who people can come up and chat to.
Carers are often referred on to the Carers Liaison Project, managed by Jane Weston. It's able to offer longer-term advice and support.
Well, certainly for some carers, it can mean giving up paid employment. And I think that's one of the things that people often struggle with for a long time, because it's a really big decision to make. And that obviously has effects in terms of relationships, status, and certainly financially. And I think, you know, that has a huge impact on people's lifestyles generally.
Julie is one of the people supported by the project. She describes herself as a parent carer, looking after her 11-year-old son, who has severe learning and physical disabilities.
He can't sit up, he can't stand, he can't walk. He's registered blind. He has got some speech, but you have to know him to be able to understand his speech. He's fed through a tube in his stomach. So basically, everything that he needs doing, his toilet needs, his hygiene needs, everything that I do for him, and also stimulation, playing with him, and he has to have someone with him all of the time because of his epilepsy.
Julie had held a nursing post before she began caring for her son.
Even though I was qualified and had actually worked on occasions with children with special needs, it doesn't prepare you at all for it, because it is 24 hours ongoing. You can't just put your coat on and go home at the end of the shift. Unless people are actually involved in the situation, they don't realise the extent of the care that is needed and the physical and emotional drains on you.
Les and his wife care for an adult son with severe mental health problems who still lives at home. Since retiring, Les has become much more involved in providing emotional and practical support for his son.
We manage quite well, even though I say it myself. Considering there's all the stress we're under, we do cope quite well. We're fortunate in one respect that we've got a decent-sized house, so if we want to, we will go in another room, just the two of us, and sit together and that's it. But if we were in a small house and he was in with us all the time, if he gets one of his periods when he's talking to himself continuously, it would drive him barmy.
Les and his wife are aware that their son is often anxious about the future.
His biggest fear is what's going to happen when we're no longer around. That's his problem. And he gets depressed about that. My wife, who's 65 and I'm 68, if we can survive, say, another 10 years, then by that time he'll be 43. He'll be middle-aged himself and perhaps he might find it easier to cope.
I think the most difficult thing is actually the entry points for people into the structure, which are quite problematic for people. How do they actually ask for help and where do they ask for help?
The ambiguous nature of the caring role can make it harder to secure the right information. Carol, who cares for both her mother and aunt, explains.
You have to fight your way through the red tape to have any care from the health authority or social services. Even the GPs, they don't always see you as a carer. The receptionists don't see you as a carer. They see you as somebody who's a relative.
Julie has had similar experiences.
It's the disbelief. Recently I had to meet up with various members of health and social work professionals and discuss Luke's medical needs as they stand. And everything that I said was questioned. And I came away thinking, well, have I got it right or have I overreacted? They didn't believe what I was saying. Because if you look at Luke, he looks pretty good. And he just looks like a child in a wheelchair. You actually have to live with him to understand the extent of his problems. People are very disbelieving.